I'm Blair Sanderson.
And I'm Ken McIntosh.
And this is the Surf Fantasy Podcast.
Yoo-hoo!
Now starting to drive, the section's running away. Medina reappears down the line. And now goes for the alley-oop, landing in the flats, into a layback, and he will recover.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, we're back. Gabrielle's the winner.
Oh,
Wilco is furthering his lead as a world champ run continues.
Medina now second.
I'm shaping up, man. It's a hell of a contest.
Yeah, hell of a contest. And so what we just heard there was Gabriel Medina coming out of a sick barrel into an alley-oop that he basically landed on his back, but then managed to ride out.
Yeah, very strong recovery. I mean, Gabriel was on fire. I mean, he did that several times, came out of a barrel, pulling off airs on sections where, I mean, these were meaty waves. I mean, like, when you look at the wave from start to finish, you know, it looks like quite a bit smaller at the end compared to the sort of giant barrels he was pulling into at the start, or in some cases, medium-sized barrels, because he was, you know, quite strategic about what ways he was taking.
A lot of ways.
But still, if you were to only see that section that he was doing the air on, you know, out of context, you know, with the rest of the wave, like, that's a big wave to be trying to bust alley-oops.
That's right. Well, he was really the only one attempting airs, I would say, in that context.
He's definitely, I think, the only one that landed one clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, I love it. Like, I love seeing it. And he also ripped that thing, like, soon after getting out of the barrel. It wasn't like, you know, exit the barrel, turn, do it. That was like the next thing he did.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's great to see. I mean, you're not going to win Fiji doing airs on the end section.
Yeah.
But it is nice to see. And I think in a lot of ways, it's where the evolution of surfing these sort of barreling spots is going. I mean, when you're talking about the size of barrels that were on offer on Fiji, I don't think you'll ever see sort of barrel to air combos frequently. Some of that has to do with the size of boards, too. Like, I know at one point the commentators were saying it was hard for the surfers, given the size of board they were riding and you know, the height of the wave, to even lay a strong rail coming out of the tube sometimes. I wonder if where Gabriel, you know, is using larger equipment than a lot of the, you know, other surfers on tour, was it giving him that ability to, you know, still, you know, ride these barrels, but then have a bit more control coming out, where other people were just going so fast by the time they came out of that barrel that it was really impossible for them to do anything other than, you know, either a giant sort of, you know, cutback or, you know, just get out the back.
Well, because Gabby typically rides equipment that's bigger than most people.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at his boards, they're quite a bit wider.
Right.
Not necessarily a lot longer than what they're riding, but there's a lot more board, a lot more foam.
So he'd be more accustomed then to pulling airs on larger equipment just generally.
Oh, yeah. Like, even in smaller waves, he's riding, relatively, you know, meatier, thicker boards than a lot of the rest of the guys on tour.
Well, I think that what this is leading to, I think, is just a more general discussion about what you do after you get out of the barrel, because I think that that matters.
Really?
Yeah, it does. But why don't we just quickly reset before we get to that topic and mention that this is the Surf Fantasy Podcast. I know we say it at the top, but this is talk about surfing all through the lens of the Surfer Magazine Fantasy Pool.
Yeah.
And if you want to join our clubhouse, it's the Surf Fantasy Podcast Clubhouse. We have members. And actually, you know, just to give a shout out right away to the winner of this one, it was not Negatron with a score of 1,068, but it was some other guy.
It wasn't. I thought it was Negatron.
Oh, no, it was. Negatron won. And actually, I offered him a congratulations.
I know. I was going to say, I was on the
Negatron, bro.
Today.
Whoa. What was that? You don't have headphones up, but that was like a crazy tweet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, don't yell so much.
So I'm just excited about Negatron's success.
Anyway, yeah, Negatron, yeah, he was killing it. He was killing it. So congrats to Negatron. Prize for you is coming in the mail. And then we also have in second place, it was
Are we really giving a prize?
No.
No, it's end of year prize.
Yeah,
the clubhouse.
If that. And then there's Shigeya 5071. Great name. At 1,037 points. Wicked. And
you might recognize this person in third.
Yeah, which is you. Congratulations.
Me. Thank you very much.
There you go. You came in third place.
I had a good contest, man.
You had a great contest.
Yeah, I didn't break the 1,000-point barrier.
I thought you were totally going to break the 1,000 points.
But
how did you not break the 1,000 points? Like, I'm shocked.
I mean, it really,
I obviously just don't understand how this works.
For me, it goes back to Italo and Caio. I mean, if you want to get into the people right off the bat on my team that didn't do well, but I had two round two losses.
Yeah.
Which is a testament to the fact that then I had five people in the quarters, but still,
yeah,
those round two losses, just like they're going to kill your world title hopes if you're on the tour,
yeah,
they're going to kill your fantasy surf hopes
it's
too.
It's so true. Yeah. Well, what happened to me, man, and not to talk about myself, because I want to talk, you did better, right? So I don't know why I keep bringing it back to myself.
Better.
But to me, it's an interesting thing, right? Because I had eight through.
Yeah.
After round two. So eight through, right? Do you know what I mean? So I'm just like, I used to think that if you could have eight through and have the winner, you are off to surf fantasy greatness. You know what I mean? But as it turns out, you need a hell of a lot more than those two variables.
And you really need the winner, because that's even remarkable.
But I had the winner. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So through and the winner, and I still end up with like 918 or something like that. I didn't even get it. I didn't get to the 1,000 either.
That is a good score, though. That's what's so weird about this year, I find, is I think in the past years, I mean, there would be high scores, but I also find that it seems this year, like, it's like the results are so random that people are getting, like, there's people that are getting huge scores every time.
Yeah.
Because, like, and I think that goes back to the value discussion that we had. Like, it is possible. Like, it used to be in years previous that it would almost be impossible to have the perfect team within a budget.
Right.
You know, to
have
seven people in the quarters. Like, you couldn't with the money you have. You always had to have two cheap guys that weren't going to go anywhere. But this year, I mean, you really can. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility to have seven or eight guys in the quarters and then get these 1,100 scores you're seeing. You know, it's crazy.
Well, I was following Surf Fantasy, or the Fantasy Surfer Twitter handle. So, and as I was saying, a stunning achievement to have eight through after round two.
Yeah.
After round three, there were still five players who had eight surfers.
Really?
Yeah. So after, because I mean, that's the thing. I went from eight in round three to three.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you took
round,
a beating there.
Holy cow. Round three was a killer. Yeah.
I mean, if I look at my local clubhouses that I'm in, I mean, I had, I think, 960 something. I didn't even win both of my local clubhouses. We had one guy in our clubhouse here. Shout out to Justin. Got the Larrytown Legends win.
Does he listen to this?
I doubt it. I don't think any of them do, but I hope they should. Maybe I'll share with them.
Yeah.
Or tweet it out.
Come on, Ken.
Anyway, I only got third in my local group with that type of score.
Because
these guys had everyone I had, plus they had Mick.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I could have had Mick too. I mean, I easily, it's a debate. I mean, I don't know that how far we want to go down the road towards Jay Bay, but that's my big debate now as I sort of took my first look at the Jay Bay team was, do I keep Italo or do I drop him to free up some space and maybe pick up Mick Fan?
Yeah, because Italo never wins. Italo never wins.
No, I know.
You know, and so maybe the thing is that he delivers results. I mean, I don't know, anything past, that's kind of the thing I'm starting to realize though, that I used to just be happy with a surfer if he made it past round two. You know what I mean? And now I need more.
Yeah.
I've lived on it. I've matured. Like, that's, you know. Anyway, don't move on to J-Bay too quickly, though.
No, absolutely.
I want to talk more about
I want to talk about me a little bit more.
Because
I did win.
Tell us what your team was.
My team was Gabrielle.
Yeah.
Kelly.
Yeah.
Wilco.
Yeah.
Wiggly. Italo. Kayo. And I forget.
But it was someone else that was eliminated in round two.
Yeah, someone that went out relatively
early. Yeah, Kayo was the bad pick.
Yeah, Kayo and Italo were hard.
Yeah, but no, but Italo at least made it past round two, right? Like,
yeah, well, he got knocked out in round three.
Yeah, and then you had the thing, I mean, the thing that everybody knows about what happened in this contest is that in the quarterfinals, right, that all of the surfers were like above 50% picks except for Ace Buchan and Adriano De Souza, right? Like, those were the two sort of low picks.
Yeah.
Adriano, so that's the thing. I mean, I'm actually thinking about going back to Adriano because he is not getting the percentage pickup love from fantasy surfer players, and he's really starting to heat up now. Although you did mention that he, I guess, had no shot at a world title at this point, which does seem to be what motivates him.
Yeah, I mean, mathematically, maybe, but really, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, I just like him because of the low percentage pick. But anyway, the thing which is why this was such a high-scoring event for so many people was that the quarterfinals were full of the usual suspects that everybody picks, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? John, Medina,
oh, and that was the other
Slater.
One. That's my eight.
Oh,
John,
there you go. John.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? But that's the thing. Everybody, 89%
of
everybody. Yeah, John. So no wonder you're not beating everybody else with a John pick because everybody had.
I know,
man. So okay, so you know what I want to talk about is Taj Burrow versus John Johnson.
Oh my lord!
Did you watch it?
Tracker.
Did you? You saw that, right?
I watched that one on playback. Oh man, I don't even know where to start. I mean, it was a barn burner. I think it could have went either way. It's as close as heats get.
But they couldn't give it to Taj because he did that fall down at the end of the barrel, right? Like, that was the deciding wave. It was the last wave, and he needed that score.
That's true.
To beat John John, and it wasn't like he needed an excellent score, but he needed a good score. But they, you know, but then you could just see the judges doing the replays, and they show John's, where he gets a barrel, comes out, does one turn, and then gets out cleanly. And then you have Taj that does almost the same thing, but just kind of falls down at the end.
Yeah.
And
I think just overwhelmed with the feeling of it. I mean, imagine the emotion that was going through Taj at that point. I mean, like, there were so many Burrow jerseys. It's probably the first time WSL has ever actually sold any of those other outside of the...
Yeah, well, I haven't seen any of those, I'm Taj Burrow. No, I'm Taj Burrow.
Yeah.
No. I'm Taj Burrow.
Yeah. No, they haven't done one of those, but I don't know, man. I thought it was a great heat. You're right. I think that is where he lost it. But I just want to talk about, I mean, for one, the title ramifications of that heat. Had he won that heat, that would have really, I think, put Wilco in an even stronger position than he is. Because then with John John not taking the win, if Gabriel also didn't take the win, it really would have put Wilco far out ahead of, you know, further out ahead than all his challengers.
Right.
I mean, now, you know, Gabriel's still relatively close, and you also have John John, who, you know, could go on a run, get three wins, and is right back in it.
Right.
But if... Yeah.
Because it almost seems like that's what it's going to take, is three wins or at least two wins and some really good results.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But no, it was incredible heat. But I think Gabriel is surfing so smart. I mean, there was an interesting thing that he was doing, and it sort of showed how, like, mindful he was. Like, every wave he took, he would almost not only be looking at his wave, but also, if time allowed, take a peek over the back of that wave to see what's coming next as he tries to decide, you know, whether this is the one worth committing to. I mean, some people describe that as, you know, inexperience and maybe him not knowing the wave as well as he should.
Yeah.
But I just think it was very strategic. And I mean, you saw that in the heat against Kelly Slater when he shut Kelly down on a priority move, but then immediately looked over and kicked back out to maintain priority and get at the back.
Yeah.
And I think if you went back, you'd see that Gabriel, I mean, everyone got caught inside a couple times because it was just the way it was going. But I think comparatively, he played a smarter game when it came to, you know, what waves he was committing to, whether or not they were going to get the score. There was that one wave that was sort of almost funny, and it would have been his heat against Kelly, I think, where he just pumped down the line on this massive wave forever, hoping that it was going to eventually barrel. And then it didn't, you know, it got shut down. But had he kicked out early on that one, he would have got rolled in, you know?
Yeah.
And you saw the impact that had on some of the other surfers.
Like, you know, just pumping down the line for a really long time reminds me of the Jadson Andre wave. Did you see that one where he was like, ah, oh, man. And then all of a sudden he's just like, whoa, I'm tucking in.
Yeah.
And he got that sweet barrel, man. That was awesome.
Yeah, Jadson had a great heat. Well, that's who ultimately took out my man Italo. And, you know, it was a close
Jadson
heat.
Andre.
Yeah, but it was just Jadson on a hot streak.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be a pattern.
I don't know, because that's the thing, is that whoever the local Fijian was almost took out Italo in round two, too, right? And he would have been the first person to lose to a local in the history of the WSL at Fiji.
It's true.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know. To me, there's some weakness in Italo that I hadn't really got...
I don't know, man. I was looking, though. I know you don't want to go down the road to Jay Bay, but I don't know. I just don't know.
Are you going to keep him on?
I might keep him on.
Yeah, and what about Wiggly? You going to keep him on, too?
I'm definitely keeping Wiggly. There's no one better in his price range. I mean, when you look what I picked a guy, I have him for like $4,000. I don't think, I mean, if maybe going into Europe, you know, trestle-style events, we go back and have a look at your man, Kanoa Igarashi.
Right.
Because he's in the same similar price range. But I think at Big J Bay, you know, hoping we get a good swell, you know, we're a month out, that I think Wiggly's a solid bet there, too.
You know who I regret not picking for obvious reasons, but one person that I'm sure I was thinking about was Ace Buchan.
Really? Yeah, yeah, I think I even heard you mention Ace.
Ace Buchan.
He wasn't really...
He was, because he's one of these low-percentage pickups who seems to be doing well and was due in a way, like, you know, the top, anybody who did well in Fantasy Surfer basically had Ace Buchan.
Yeah, and his result now, he's in line for one of the best results he's ever had. He's in the top, I think he's in the top 10. I think he might even be like 8 or 9.
So that's the thing. So he'll continue, and it seems like the conditions are still favorable to his style of surfing going forward, at least in the short term.
Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument for Jay Bay, for sure, and then Tahiti.
Yeah, and then the thing too is that I remember what you said as well a couple of podcasts ago. You said, Wilco is on my team for the whole season, unless things start going really crazy. And I dropped him after Brazil because of the weak performance there, and you kept him, and you did it, man.
I can't wait to talk Wilco, man. It's just so impressive. Like, I, the fact that he was able to beat John twice in waves that are so suited to John's style, and John was surfing well.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't making, you know, he really did outsurf him. Like, John wasn't making tactical errors. He wasn't making, you know, bonehead sort of decisions. And Wilco just charged, you know? And the fire, like, this talk about, you know, proving his critics wrong. Yeah. And he seemed so focused.
Because I said that, right? Even in the last podcast, I said that he doesn't have a reputation for surfing well in shallow reef-breaking waves.
Yeah, but, I mean, he said on the pod, it's his favorite thing to do is go big, go left, you know?
So, go big, go left.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, and Jay Bay. So yeah, I guess you'll have him on your team there as well.
Like, oh yeah. I mean, he's done well at Jay Bay in the past. Yeah. And he's doing so well. Like, you got to look at it. I mean, he's going to be strong in Jay Bay. He's going to be strong in Tahiti. He has no throwaways.
Who? Wilco?
Not throwaways, but not like 25th.
Yeah. He didn't come 25th in one contest?
No, he got to round like 3 or 4 in Brazil.
Wow.
Yeah. No, he's looking good. And the guys who are up against
him, you know who else has
it,
by the way, is Kanori Igarashi. He's never lost in round 2.
Really?
Yeah, or one. Yeah. So he's always, in his entire WSL career, he's made it to round 3.
I might have to think about Kanoa. I mean, if the swell's looking small, I might consider him down the line. Definitely won't be on my team for Tahiti.
And then for Fanning, are you going to put him on then for Tahiti as well?
Oh man, I don't know. I can't even go there yet. But on Wilco,
these are the decisions, right? And then Jordy Smith is the other one, right?
Yeah, Jordy.
And then Slater, you're going to put him on again?
I don't know, man.
I just, you know what it is though, man? I don't like picking all those guys, you know, because everybody has them and it's kind of boring. Like, I in some ways, I'm sticking to what I did. Like, if things went, I had the 8 guys going through and a lot of my dark horses, right? So Connor Coffin, right? He had a fair amount of pickup, but not much.
Poor Connor.
But you know what I mean? And the thing too is that those guys squeaked, some of those guys really squeaked into round 3.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that, you know, like, I realized that I got lucky with my picks, but then I got just disastrously unlucky. You know what I mean? Yeah. Connor Coffin against, who was he going against anyway, that he lost that freaking, he did the interference.
Well, that was on Wiggly. Like,
that was on Wiggly. See, that was me versus you, man. This was, like, you know what I mean? It could have been totally different.
I remember we were texting during that one, and I was saying I was actually hoping for Connor.
Yeah, you were liking the guy. And then, you know, he just forgot, right? So, I mean, so we agreed then that interference was just one of these things where he's like, whoops.
Oh, yeah, it was just, you know, it was just
force of habit. I was on the inside, so I went, and
he would have won that heat.
Yeah,
like he would have won that heat.
He would have won that heat.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, Kelly, because Wiggly won 2 heats on interference calls.
Yeah,
the second one didn't really matter.
Kelly, is that right? Kelly won 2 heats.
No, Wiggly won 2 heats on interference calls. Yeah, but the second one against Michelle Barrez, it didn't really affect the outcome.
See, but then, so here's the thing, right? So we're talking about Wiggly, so maybe he's not such a great pick because, you know, those results don't reflect really how well he surfed. He got lucky, man.
Well, I mean, Connor would have been close, but Connor would have taken it. And he beat Perez one way or the other. And then he gave Kelly a bit of a run.
Yeah.
Kelly played a good game against him. I mean, I don't know. I think Kelly, he's just so good in those waves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he also sort of out-tacticianed the tactician. You know, if you want to think of Wiggly like that. Because the way it went down, I mean, that I remember it is, Kelly, you know, Wiggly was trying to play this priority sort of hassle game, you know, towards the end of that heat, and Kelly just outpositioned him in the lineup. So instead of using strategy, he just used his knowledge, incredible knowledge that he has from being there, serving that play so many times, and was in the right position and just got caught the wave that he got the win on under priority. And then after the heat was funny because he said, you know, that one was for Connor and Michelle, just sort of putting it back in his face that he can't win everything on interferences, which wasn't really fair because they were interferences that Wiggly had really didn't prompt.
Yeah.
But Kelly, man, Kelly has this latent Brazilian like hate that he's always had.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did you see it at the end of Fanning's loss that Kelly went up to him and said to him, this was made, there was a commentary about this, in the broadcast where I guess after Fanning's loss, Kelly went up to him and said, yeah, man, I saw that wave that barreled for like 5 seconds before you even got on it, man. And it was just like crazy barreling. And then Fanning kind of says, oh, yeah, and sort of walks away. And then one of the commentators is like, yeah, that's Kelly just putting the needle in a little bit. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know,
Kelly's,
he's like,
hey, I saw that you didn't get that wave just right, you know.
And then McFanning was like, screw off, buddy. Yeah. And just sort of like walked away.
By the way, I don't think he can help himself.
Speaking of McFanning, it's time for our segment, Claim, the Claim segment. So let's run the theme song. We all know it.
Okay, kids, class is in session. Today we're going to learn how to claim your wave. Stop your guessing. There's a million ways to claim. But do you have your own style that's specific to your name?
So the claim that I'm talking about, of course, is
describe the claim.
Yeah. So what round was this in? Hang on, I got it here. It was round 4, because if people want to check it out.
Here we go, some movement out the back. McFanning with priority finds this one. He's going to come out. Will this wave give him more? It does. It rifles down along the reef, not particularly deep on that second section. But the work was done at the start of that ride, and Fanning was chasing a 4.27 to get himself up into the lead. And all the competitors are just having fun out there at this point in time.
It was a fun claim. Yeah, definitely.
It was in round 4, heat 3, about midway through. McFanning gets a considerable barrel, nothing super, super good, and then does this crazy claim.
I know. I mean, we were just watching it back here on the full screen trying to figure out exactly
where to characterize it.
Like, it almost started doing? Like, at first I thought he was going for the sort of Andy Iron-esque, like, shotgun gun type thing. It was pointed down. But then he went into, like, it was almost like a weird robot-style dance.
He did two hands to the point. He gestured.
It's not my favorite claim.
See, now I'm getting confused about what we've talked about, because I'll also then bring up the Kenora Igarashi claim that he ended up losing with. So this was also in Brazil, I believe. I don't even know which one it was. But anyway, he felt that he won the heat with a wave that he caught. And at the end, he did like a celebratory claim. So not just like a, yes, that was a good wave, but like, I did it! I won! And he was like really going. And then he lost it. He didn't win, you know?
I think that's not a good claim, because I don't remember it. Yeah. I hardly watched any in Brazil.
Anyway, I think the claim, to me, this reminds me, I was listening to, this is completely off topic, but we talk about whether claims influence the judges. And the more I think about it, the more I think it does. I was listening to a podcast featuring the campaign organizer for Ted Cruz.
Interesting. Yeah,
very interesting. And very candid conversation. And they talked about before he got into politics, he was an umpire and was on his way to become an umpire in the Major League Baseball League. And he said that he recounted the story of one time umping a game, and the coach was riding him, like, you know, come on, you know, and really just giving him all kinds of grief through the whole game. And he said, this is what coaches do. They know what they're doing, that they're just trying to rattle that umpire so that they'll just kind of maybe give a favorable call, because they've got that buzzing noise, you know what I mean? And he said that you never call a perfect game. Like, any umpire can look at a game that they called, and they can point to things where, like, yeah, I was wrong there, I was wrong there, I was wrong there. And so, to me, it feels like, there's so many things that influence the judges, right? Like, just the environment, the crowd, who's hot, who's not, who's retiring at the end of this freaking thing.
I think,
like,
that
all plays into it, right? And I think the claim does, too. It's got to. Like, I just think that there's so much that you can do to improve your chances by how you finish a wave, including, of course, the moves you do, but also just, like, the way you style it out, how you behave. Like, another thing I'll tell you is I think, like, awesome flyaways get you more points.
Really?
Totally. Like, if you're coming out of there, and it's a good barrel, and then you just zip it off the top of the wave and go, boo, and stick your hands down beside, and just, like, do a little, like, cock to your head, and splat. Love that, man.
Yeah. I mean, it was an argument that's long been made about Kelly Slater, that when he was on his incredible run, that a reason he'd get so many big scores is he would often make moves look a little more difficult in the recovery aspect than, you know, they were. And then he'd be rewarded for that, because it looked to them as if, you know, he's making the impossible possible.
Yeah.
When had you done the same thing perfectly cleanly, strangely enough, you probably would have scored more.
Making
lower.
It look easy is actually against your interests.
Yeah. And that's the Parco example, that he was always so smooth that he didn't get the credit for the power and precision of his turns.
Yeah.
He should have.
And I think that is a conversation that's been going on for a while. And I think, too, that people talk about what the flyaway does. Like, I just think that it gets the audience excited, right? Like, when you see someone do it, you know that the guy who's surfing is stoked, and so the people that are in the boats are stoked, right? So the environment changes, and that influences the judges.
I wonder how much of the sound from the boat can the judges at Fiji really hear when they're in that tower.
Yeah, probably not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Cloudbreak, I mean, I think its original name or one of the names it had was like Thunder Cloud Reef, because it's so loud when it's breaking, like, yeah, especially on that last day.
Another audible thing I hear all the time in the broadcast is, like, it sounds like someone's lifting the anchor to the boat, like the main boat. I hear that all the, like, it's like, I hear that all the time.
Know what I actually liked about this contest is that because of the way they are so far from shore and they're on this boat,
yeah,
there wasn't that sort of awkward, long award ceremony following it.
Right.
It was sort of...
wait a minute. I've never watched the award ceremony in
my life. Oh, really? Just find they're so... Everyone's sort of standing around and wondering if they should spray, like, champagne or not. And there's some, like, civic...
Do they get chaired up when they land? When he goes back to Nomotu, do they chair him up to his, like, cottage or whatever?
I don't think, you know? Like, that whole thing that's just sort of... I like the chairing off the beach. I like that idea, your feet don't touch the sand. But what I don't like is just the awkward stage. Because I feel like, especially from the broadcast, like, I think they're doing that for the people at the beach.
Yeah.
But on the broadcast, it's like they interview him in the water. They interview him sort of when he hits the shore.
Yeah.
And then we all wait around for a while for another bad interview. Yeah. And usually it's the worst of the three. Because it's right.
It's true. You know, like, even at the end of that one, too, like, you could tell that there was some disappointment that it was going to be Medina. You know what I mean? Because, like, you know, that, who is, it's not Ross, it's the other one that swam over, the guy that was doing all the water commentary this time.
Oh, my God, I can't believe, he's my favorite, like, he's the man. I can't think of either
right
now.
Yeah, it's on the tip of my tongue, but anyway, we all know who he is. But anyway, like, you, because there is that moment where he kind of surfs up, because there was so much more drone footage this time, which, by the way, I super loved.
Oh, it looks super so nice on the big glassy day. Yeah. Like,
so you could see, though, that commentator was coming over and was sort of sitting next to Medina, but Medina wasn't quite ready to do the interview.
Yeah.
And
they slightly too early.
A little awkward there, you know. And then, you know, another thing I was thinking too, man, is that, like, it kind of sucks that Medina has to immediately switch into English. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are probably as many Brazilians watching. I don't know what the audience numbers are, but that he, like, you know, is celebrating in Portuguese to a certain extent. You can kind of feel that.
Yeah.
But then right away he's got to talk in English. You know, like, this is an international contest, but, you know, English still reigns supreme.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother me. I think, like, I give a lot of credit.
I just kind of thought that it sucks for him. You know what I mean? That, like, he's full of all of this amazing energy, but then has to kind of, like, spit out this broken English.
They need to have it like the UFC, where they just always have the translator when it's a Brazilian fighter, and the translator comes over and sticks his arm underneath the other.
I like that idea.
And there'd be enough Brazilian surfers there that if they didn't speak good English. But then why not just hear from, I don't know if that's the solution. Maybe he should say it in Brazilian and say it in English himself. Strider Wasilewski. I can't believe I couldn't remember.
Is that what you were doing on your phone? You were looking for that?
He was driving me nuts. I love Strider. He's the man. He got some sick waves. Did you see Strider's POV waves?
No.
Oh, man. He took the GoPro in the barrel and got a couple that they were using on little ads for WSL.
Right.
I think I might have saw it on Instagram. Man, that guy can still surf.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's been a boatman at Tavaru before, too. He spent months
there. Another boatman exam?
Yeah, he's a killer surfer, but... Yeah, really got it. And apparently got a ton of waves on the lay days, too, like surfed his face off. And now this weekend, because it wrapped up when it did, apparently the way the travel arrangements have been made, I heard them talking about this, that most people are staying for the weekend.
Yeah.
And it's like they are just going to get, like, that swell that yesterday was supposed to even clean up and get a little bit better. So those boys.
They're all there.
I want to see Joe Turpel on one of those waves. Joe, put that up on Instagram.
Yeah, we should see. They should all go out. You know what would be?
Commentator's Cup.
A good, like, sort of like a heat. What, you know, if the WSL did this, I think this would be good. They did a heat with all the commentators and got the pro surfers to commentate.
That would be awesome.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they could totally just, like, make fun of all the tropes that the commentators use and make fun of the surfers. You know, because, like, and hopefully they would be kind of crappy. Like, I know that they're good, but you could just be like, oh, they'd be like, oh, I would have totally had that.
I think you'd be surprised by the quality of it. I mean, if you look at Potts, we saw him surf earlier in the Legends Challenge, and he didn't look that good. No offense. I mean, he's a better surfer than me. But, I mean, Strider, I think, would kill it. I think, I bet Ronnie Blakey is a charger.
Right.
Like, I haven't seen him surf a lot, but knowing his pedigree.
We could get the gal in there, too.
She would actually do well in those conditions. Yeah.
By the way, another thing that reminded me of...
I don't know about Joe, though.
the blatant sexism of just the fact that we only focus on the men and all these sorts of things. Like, you know, we've talked about it before. I apologize. But another stark reminder was the Steph Gilmore shirt, the jersey commercial. When all of a sudden, you know, like, because we were used to everybody saying, yeah. Oh, I'm Medina, I'm Fanning, I'm John, whatever. But then when I saw a man going like, nah, I'm Stephanie Gilmore. I was like, well, that's weird.
You found that weird?
I found that weird. But then I caught myself and thought, now, wait a minute. I shouldn't find that weird because there are plenty of women claiming to be John, and I had no problem with that. But, like, just to have this, like, big, burly man with, like, a beard going like, nah, I'm Stephanie Gilmore. And I was like, what? I was like, why would you say that? You're not Stephanie Gilmore. That's crazy.
I don't know, man. It didn't really strike you
That didn't jump out at you at all as being kind of weird?
No, I think I hate those guys
so
much.
You are so progressive, guy. You're so progressive.
Well, you're very self-aware.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I'm working on it. Also, by the way, we were watching, we were talking about whether Fanning was going to go into Jay Bay, or not that whether he was, but whether we'd pick him and all this sort of stuff. Because they were advertising, you know, there was that commercial where it was just Fanning, mostly just the nose of his board.
Yeah, we were always coming back.
We were always coming back.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
anyway,
awesome.
The one thing that I did pick up on is you can see that wedding ring. That, you know, because that would have been from like a contest from a period
before. I wonder if that acted like a lure. And actually attracted
the
shark.
And so...
And maybe that's why he broke it off.
Who wears their wedding ring surfing?
Dude, I'm not wearing mine right now. But I'm going out after this, right?
Yeah. No. Honestly, I don't take mine off or whatever, but if I lost it, I wouldn't care.
Yeah, I mean, my ring is actually really cool. It's made out of a Moroccan coin by a guy at our local farmer's market that turns coins into rings.
Is that right?
So yeah, it started as a Moroccan coin and was turned into a ring. And it's only made of like tin.
It
turns my finger green when I get wet.
Nice.
It wasn't that expensive. But I really like it. It's cool. And actually, the engravings in it almost look like little waves. Hmm. I'd show you, but...
But you don't have your wedding ring. No worries. Are you going to bust it out?
Oh, actually, I have it on my keychain.
Yeah.
Because that's what I do. I put it on... No one cares about this at all.
I did. Is this it here?
Horrible.
Oh, yeah. No. That looks like a real ring, though. Very nice. You know what? It's good. And it's a little beefier than mine, I gotta say. But I got small hands. But I did bring it up for a reason, though, right?
Because Trump hands.
Yeah. We were talking about, you know, his Fanning's plan, right? He's taking all his time off. But the reason, apparently, that he got divorced in the first place was because he was spending too much time on tour. So what is this about? Like, you're like, hey, you're spending too much time on tour. There's not enough time for family. Okay, let's get a divorce. And now I'm going to take time off the WSL at the same time.
Yeah, I mean,
factors at play.
I think he just needed time, man.
Yeah.
There are so many factors at play.
But don't get a divorce before you take time off the WSL. You know what I mean? Maybe take some time off the WSL and they get divorced.
Maybe
don't
get married at all.
Yeah.
While we're giving out relationship advice.
Anybody that is on the tour should not get married, I would say.
I totally agree. I mean, but
Wilco's
not married.
Do you think that Keanu Singh's girlfriend is going to dump him because he's not doing so well?
I don't know.
Because she's pretty, like, you know, up
high
there.
Profile?
Yeah.
Yeah, never mind.
And Keanu Singh, not so much.
Yeah, no.
Underperforming.
I don't know why. I'm the one that used to always bring up the wives, but for some reason I'm feeling, like, uncomfortable talking about people's relationships. But
it must be because your wife listens to this podcast?
No, she doesn't.
Okay.
No,
mine either.
No. So I don't know. I think they'll stay together just because I'm basing this purely on the WSL promotional stuff that they've done together, but they seem to have a very strong relationship.
Yeah.
And I think you'd have to be a special type of person to want to date like a female MMA fighter
right.
to begin with.
Yeah.
Because it would be a little emasculating knowing that she could like choke
you
out at
any
moment.
Yeah.
And
all
so,
you can do is like catch a wave.
Yeah. So I think high hopes for
yeah, it takes a special kind of guy. It's true. There you go. And with this conversation going the way it is, I am going to look down at my notes quickly.
Yeah, that's
to
fine.
See if there's anything that can like bring
I got
back
more
on
to say about Wilco.
Right?
This is what I have to say about Wilco.
What else do you have to say about
Wilco? Well, I'm super happy he's doing this well. But what if it all falls apart? What
yeah,
if after
that could
three
happen.
Wins,
that could happen.
It could happen. And if it did happen, it would be, I think, the largest collapse of a world title campaign in the history of professional surfing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing you could really compare it to. I mean, there's been years where Kelly won three in a row and had it locked up before they hit Europe.
Yeah.
But I've never seen someone with three wins in the first part of the season.
Two wins,
you're right. I'm sorry. But I feel like this
final.
Was a win.
Yeah.
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 Two wins in a final.
Because anyway. The scores, I mean, yeah, because I know that Fantasy Surfer changed what the points are for a win.
Yeah,
but the WSL didn't, right?
Yeah.
That's not the same.
So, yeah, that's right. I don't know what I'm saying.
No, that's all right. honest mistake guy. Yeah. But yeah, it would still be a horrific
meltdown. Anyway, if he doesn't win, I think it's going to be a big bummer.
One thing that I find that the commentators get wrong all the time, you hear them say this all the time, is that they say, well, can't win a world title if you have results like that, like a 25th, right? Yeah. And they keep saying that. But that's not true, because anybody who's going to contend, like anybody who's going to challenge Wilco, also has crappy results. Like, there isn't anybody, you know, that has steady, good results in every contest, you know, except for maybe Italo, who hasn't won one. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, and I suppose that's where a dark horse could come out of nowhere, you know? Someone who is in the middle of, like, let's say, fifth, sixth, whatever, and hasn't won anything, or even made, like, say, let's say, the semis, but has not had anything under, let's say, round four, you know, and then they win a couple. I mean, I suppose it could happen.
But, I mean, if you think of the people that are in that, slot right now, I mean, I just don't see
I could see
it.
That would be one person. Because has Medina had some 25th results? Probably has.
Medina had, like, bad results off the top of the year. So that's what I was saying when I was talking about throwaways, is that Gabriel already has at least one and possibly two throwaways, if I'm remembering this correctly.
Right.
You know, like a 25th. And everyone else does as well. Like, John's had a bad result.
Yeah. Slater, of course.
Slater has horrible results.
Yeah. Slater's not even in
the Kyo had a bad one this time. I mean, and that's your top five.
Yeah, that's right. Kyo. That's right. He did have a bad result out in the... Hey, by the way, I also was in contact with the Fantasy Surfer Twitter account.
Oh, really?
He or she, whoever administers that account, said that every contest there are people who are out completely after round two.
Really?
Yeah, so no one threw to round three.
Whoa.
Can you imagine that?
I am trying to imagine what that team would look like in this case.
Well, and then he did also point out that there are some clubhouses where that's what they try to do. So who has the worst result? So, I mean, maybe those are the cases, but...
They're trying on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, like, in this contest, but he did... I could look it up. He said in every contest, there are people that are eliminated completely after round two.
That's funny.
Like, I mean, in this case, I don't know who you could have picked.
I know.
Can you imagine, like...
I guess you pick the local Tahitian.
Yeah, you just have to... Because you couldn't pick anybody who would be favored to win.
In that Melling.
Person. Yeah. Melling made it through. Melling was my boy, man. He made it through. Yeah, he made it through to three. That's why, that's what I was saying. I was on cloud nine when we had this thing going at after round two. Because I had, eight through.
Oh, the tables have turned.
They've turned. I'm doing so crap this year. Personal note, by the way... feel really kind of awkward about something. I sold a board on the internet, one of my used boards, you know. It's a board I've had for a long time. The thing is that I now realize, you know, it's not a good board. And I still managed to get like $200 for it.
Oh, because your new board is so much better.
That's right. Huh. Yeah, and so now knowing that the board I currently have, I'm like, oh man, this board I had was no good.
So you feel bad that you sold it, or you feel bad that you found a good board?
Yeah, well, that... And I feel badly for the guy that I sold it to. Because you know what I mean? You got to sell it, right? Because everybody that comes and kicks the tires is like, I don't know. And so then I just find myself, without even being able to stop it, like going like, well, yeah, it catches a lot of waves,
God.
And like, it's a good board. Like, oh yeah, you know, it's good in all conditions. It was a 6'6 fish epoxy, like a South Point, like generic, like mold board. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you don't need to feel bad. If whoever...
It's like a
rite
of passage in the surfers.
He
has to own crap.
He just doesn't know.
He didn't know.
This will be part of the journey in him finding an actual board. If you're buying, I mean, it's one thing if you're in California and you can buy a $200 board that's actually good that's on Craigslist. But around here, if you're paying $200 for a board on the internet, like, just don't.
Yeah,
like, chances are
it's not going to be good.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. The thing is, I was feeling so guilty about it though, that because he said, yeah, you know, because I have a smaller board and I'm, you know, sometimes having trouble getting waves, and I'm like, well, this will be better. But then I immediately started coaching him, and I'm like, what you want to do? Okay,
oh
he's
my
like,
god,
you got to do some practice pop ups. He's like, oh, but won't that hurt the fins? I'm like, no, bro, you got to do it on the carpet at home. You do 25 every day, and you're going to lock that in muscle memory, and your pop ups are going to be swell. Because I want this guy to do well on the board. I just sold him.
Assuming he knows how to pop up, practicing how to pop up bad isn't going to help you.
Well, that's what I was doing, because that's what I'm saying, right? I'm like, look, you can't walk up on the board.
You take your fins out of your board, right? If you feel it's necessary.
Not on this board.
Oh, these are glassed in.
No, they're not glassed in, but they're, like, the epoxy is over it or whatever.
Well, that's glassed in.
No, it's not glassed in, though, because it's not glass. Like, it's a plastic board.
Weird, man. Yeah. I feel bad.
I should have showed you the board before I sold it.
Dude.
Actually, I think I have the pictures of it somewhere if I can show you. But we'll save that for another time.
I'm glad you got a new board. That board sounds like shit.
It was, yeah. So now I've got this new board. And the thing is that when you get the new board, of course, you're just like paddling. You know what I mean? It's a combination of your stoke on the board.
Yeah.
Just makes you like surf so much better.
Oh, man. I've had one magic board that I wish I could have back. It was the 510 Eric Arakawa Super Skate. Is what it was called. It's so good, man.
What happened to it?
I broke the nose off it in the beach break.
Really?
Yeah, trying to do a big... A
lot of broken boards in Fiji.
Yeah, a lot of broken boards, broken leashes, washers. I mean, that was the other thing. Poor Wilco. That heat he had against Ace.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the point I was
destroyed.
Making.
He came out destroyed.
How, like, this is what I don't understand. And this is where, like, where you obviously don't know a lot about boards based on that last part of the podcast. I don't know a lot about surfing cloud break.
I used to not know.
But what I wonder is why, when you get like so many waves on the head so many times in a row, do you not just go paddle somewhere else? Like, clearly where you're sitting might be the right spot according to some theory or according to usual conditions. Yeah. But just go out a little bit further.
Really?
Like, I don't
understand. But were the waves working further out? Like,
well, they were peaking on this, like, outside, sort of, like, outside ledge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the reasons the last day, I'd argue, wasn't as good as the day.
Right.
The second
we haven't had that
day.
Conversation yet.
Yeah, because it was, I was looking at someone describing it better than I could, but I think it was that there was a bit too much west in the swell. So it was, like, hitting, and due to the size and the direction, it was hitting this sort of outside ledge. But it really wasn't, and then it was sort of breaking almost too soon.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really
it wasn't
rifling
forming
over
anything.
That, like, inside, like, shish kebab section like it was the day before.
Well, that's the thing, because, they were catching waves that had been broken for, like, 20 seconds before they, you know. But it didn't necessarily look like they were very good sections, out where you're talking about, right?
But it's almost like, I mean, and this is where this probably is going to make me sound like a kook, but I'd compare it to some of those, like, you know, second, third reef, like, roll-in days at Pipeline.
Right,
now,
so
when
roll
it gets
it
to
in.
That point where it's breaking on the outer reef, not that you're going to get a score on that first section, but why not catch the wave there?
Yeah.
Now you're on the wave. You can see what's going on. Maybe it's not going to shape up. You can kick out. But
and you're not going to get them on the head.
Yeah, but the idea of sitting inside and then just getting pounded before you because you're like a foot in, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like,
but
it seems like something I would do because I don't know any better. But to see them do it over and over again, I just don't understand it.
Well, I mean, maybe it's the critical drop that they're after, right? I mean, when you do the roll and you don't get that drop.
Yeah.
Scoring is weird that way. You know what I mean? Like that, you could get a roll-in perfect barrel, and it's going to get a 10, as would, let's say, a steep drop, like a critical drop perfect barrel. Do you know what I mean? Like, with a 10, the scale, it maxes out at a certain point, and you can have, I would say, multiple degrees of 10-point rides, and some are, like, more difficult than the
other. Oh, yeah.
Even within, like, the same heat.
Absolutely. Episode. Well, I mean, that brings us back to the start. Like, you started with that wave of Gabriel's where he came out of the big barrel and did an air.
Yeah, it was so brutally underscored.
Yeah, could that have been a 10? But at that point in the heat, it can't be a 10, because that was the only good wave that had been surfed to that point.
Right, right.
So
I'm even
they
saying,
had to leave room
even,
for
even,
both, like, and it wasn't just leave room for Wilco, it's to leave room for Gabriel. If he gets a wave that's twice, like not twice as big, but substantially bigger, because that wasn't the biggest barrel.
Yeah.
Or what if he does a wave that's the same and comes out and does like a full rotator air and lands it clean?
Yeah.
So it's, I agree that it's tricky, and that's why the judges often say don't think about the number, think about the person that did best in the heat and the relative comparison of the scores within the heat, but it's tough.
That, by the way, brings me to one thing that I noticed and was thinking about in these conditions, although they weren't as perfect as they were even last year, I would say.
I always like to see little restaurants too thrown in.
Yeah,
that's a nice
did,
way
yeah.
to see.
It's did they a do?
Different.
Did they do it last year?
I think I don't remember last year, man. I think they did. I feel like they did, but I'm not sure.
Anyway, because that was Owen. That was the Owen Wright double 10 in the final, right? That
oh yeah, they finished the cloud break for sure. But I feel like early on they had a session because you get those really long. Barrels, I mean, you get long barrels at cloud break too, but restaurants is just like a long, sketchy, shallow, like weaving through the tube. Like, there's something about restaurants. I think maybe it, not that I can relate to it, but I just like it. Like, there's something I like cloud break too, but restaurants I think is really something.
Pop quiz, what happens? Because I was thinking about these in these conditions, it's totally icy at some point happening where you have both surfers get two tens, right? Like, that could happen.
I think they count back.
I know the answer. I checked the rule book.
Do they count back to the third score?
Nope.
What do they do?
They decide based on who was ranked higher before the event started.
That sort of seems lame.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Yeah, so yeah, nothing to do with the performance in that contest. So in this case, for instance, if you had Medina versus Wilco, and they both scored two, like, basically 20-point heats, it would have gone to Wilco.
Interesting.
A little food for thought for you there.
You're learning, man. You're quickly surpassing my knowledge of
reading the rule book,
surfing.
What do you want? Yeah. I'm a Grom guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Grom surfer guy. But anyway, also sucking real bad this year on the fantasy server.
Well, we're only halfway, and just like all the servers we've been talking about, you get two throwaways yourself.
That's true. I had three.
Yeah, and that's where I'm in tough in all my local clubs, because I already have two throwaways too. But even with those out of the picture, man, like, I'm neck and neck. So many people got big scores. It's crazy.
Yeah. So good luck to you. Good luck to everybody for the next contest. Thank
We're going
to see if we can throw in another podcast before J-Bay. I can't see us not doing that.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. We do a little U.S. Open to surf.
Right. You think we're doing that?
I think we might.
All right, we'll give it a go. What people need to know then, if you want to find out if we're going to do that U.S. Open of Surf or anything else, you need to subscribe to the podcast, because these things drop irregularly. And if you subscribe, you're going to know the instant it comes out. And you should also rate the damn thing. You know what I mean?
Rate, review it, all those things.
And give it 5 stars. Yeah. That's the other thing. Don't give it, you know.
You know what? Just send us some money. Email money transfer.
We're looking for sponsors. Email money transfer. And then something will be coming to you in the mail. So look for the podcast surfer group on the Surfer Fantasy site. It's Surf Fantasy Podcast. Join. And then also you can
transfer
contest
me your
us.
Air miles.
Oh, hey, by the way, surf_podcast is now live on Twitter. We have 7 followers.
Keep it real.
You!